The Morning Show. The Home Team. No, it's both. It's the Crossover.
Crossover! Step back!
Presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen right here on 960theref.com.
Chris Brame from the Home Team, David Johnston from The Morning Show, and we are together yet not together. It is the Crossover Podcast presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville and also now in Five Points. We are in the same building, but we are in different studios as we continue to play it safe and quarantine here during the month of April. But as we're recording this, Dave, it is the final day of April, so we've almost made it through another month, a month that we should have had the Final Four, a month that we should have had the Masters. We did have the NFL draft last week, but this was a month, no Braves, no baseball of any kind, but hopefully things will start to lighten up in May as we move on into the summer. But here we go. We got through half of March without sports and a whole month of April, and maybe business will start to pick up again sometime soon.
Yeah, the Dogs would have been hosting Ole Miss this weekend. This would have been week 8 of 10 in the SEC baseball schedule. And the Braves would be in New York right now playing the Mets, and we'd have the Wells Fargo going on at, I guess, at Quail Hollow in Charlotte. That would have been the golf coming up this weekend. But at least, and I'll say this, NASCAR still, a month from now, planning to have the Coca-Cola 600 in Charlotte. In fact, the week before, I think they're going to have the race in Darlington. So that's only, 18 days away.
Yeah.
And middle of June, we should get some PGA Tour golf when they resume, I guess, at the Colonial.
June 11th.
Yeah, June 11th. The LPGA is announced. I didn't see their schedule, but they've announced that they're going to get back out on the course in July. And we'll start to have a few things going on here, too. So we're getting closer and closer. And now that the NFL draft is in the rearview mirror, we got to start looking ahead to some other stuff. But we still need to talk about the draft. You and I recorded the show last Friday. We moved it back a day so we could talk about the first round. But we haven't talked about the rest of the draft, including the Bulldogs, and certainly with what the Atlanta Falcons did or didn't do for the rest of their draft. But certainly, I thought, again, the NFL did a great job with the draft, considering how everything was laid out. I thought it was kind of cool to get to see coaches and GMs and their families and their little setups, and the same for the families that were being picked and drafted. And then again, there was the very uncomfortable slide of one Jake Fromm, who ends up with the Buffalo Bills. And I heard you mention in one of your Southern Sports Centers that he even dropped a number. So he's gone from number 11 down to number 10 for the Bills.
Yeah, probably not a bad idea. Scott Norwood once wore 11 for Buffalo, and he's an all-time GOAT, not greatest of all time in Bills history. So maybe a decent idea. I don't know if it was Jake's idea or if the Bills just went, hey, you're going to wear number 10 now, and this will be your number, and we're going to sign it to you, because there's not anyone currently on the team that wears 11. I know Drew Bledsoe and Rob Johnson both wore it for them, so a couple of other quarterbacks have had it. But, yeah, Scott Norwood would probably be the most infamous Buffalo Bill to have worn number 11. So probably best for Jake to slip down and just wear number 10 instead. But, unfortunately, Jake ended up becoming that uncomfortable prospect that allows the cameras into his home. So there you were watching all weekend, and every now and then they take a shot inside the Fromm household, and they would just be sitting there and sitting there and sitting there. I remember one time, I guess it was his brother, was on the couch, and he was just on his phone. And while Jake and his mom and dad were staring up at the screen, hoping to hear Jake's name called. But it was unfortunate. He slid to the fifth round, and he did not have a good combine. And then there was, beyond the combine, there was never an opportunity for any pro days or any other options for him to even meet face to face, really, and get in there and interview with any of these teams. And I don't know if that would have helped him go any higher once the draft did roll around, but it certainly didn't help his chances after what, by all accounts, was not an impressive combine performance for him.
So what are your thoughts on, every year it seems like you have two or three quarterbacks that are going to go really, really high, And then it seems like, okay, teams don't want to really take a chance. You know, if they're going to take a pick on a quarterback after that, they might wait till somebody who's going to be picked in the fourth or fifth round. I don't know, maybe a little bit later on. Because it was like, I'm trying to remember, like, so leading up, like, so Jalen Hurts went ahead of Fromm, way ahead of Fromm. So did Jordan Love. So James Morgan, the quarterback, isn't that his name, the quarterback from FIU?
Yeah.
He was the only – but he was really the only quarterback that went ahead of Fromm that was kind of an eyebrow raiser. Does that make sense? It wasn't as much – like, I know Jacob Eason went in the fourth round. He dropped two, but it wasn't like there were a ton of quarterbacks that were picked ahead of Fromm that you hadn't heard their name talked about other than maybe Morgan. It was just how far down in the draft he ended up dropping. If that makes any sense.
No, yeah, you're right. Like, of all the guys that were considered like the top half dozen quarterbacks in the league, they were the first ones drafted, with the exception of that the kid from Florida International going ahead of Jake. And a lot of accounts, a lot of people thought, that was a terrible pick by the Jets. Like, he was one of those guys that was the undrafted free agent, and there they were picking him in the. Did he go in the fifth round, too, or maybe late fourth round?
But I think whenever. He went in the fifth round, I think.
Yeah. We know with Jake here, I mean, part of his legacy and stories is that he took over for Eason. And, you know, you see, like, well, he beat Eason out. Like, well, technically he didn't beat Eason out because Eason was the starting quarterback that year. Eason got hurt. And then Jake never gave away the starting job because he played great. And then Fields came in and, Jake was able to hold him off. So he's kind of been this underdog that has had these higher rated quarterbacks around him in his career that he's beaten out for jobs here in Athens. And, you know, now he's going to go to the NFL kind of in that same, position, in that same boat. And we'll see how it goes for him. And, Buffalo. So
and not to not to throw water on the situation. I mean, guys that get drafted in his position normally don't turn out to be lifelong 10-year, 15-year NFL veterans. But there are a few, so it's not like he can't be. But it's just maybe the odds are stacked against him a little bit. But then again, like you said a moment ago, this year's just different because teams didn't have their pro days. There weren't ways for Fromm to impress teams through the interview process, through some of the other things. He was a guy that was going to have to rely on intangibles instead of tangibles. So there was a lot of things that made this draft obviously different. So we might see some guys that got drafted lower than what we thought end up being fine. We might see some guys getting drafted a little higher than we thought, maybe not do as well. So, I mean, it's just really hard to say. This is going to be the draft. It's just going to be the different one for a long time just because of what happened. But, as far as being the ultimate team player, trying to make everybody in the quarterback room and better, I mean, Jake's going to be that guy. And he's going to work really hard. And Buffalo, that's a weird fit. There aren't a whole lot of connections between the University of Georgia and Buffalo. They have Isaiah McKenzie. They drafted Cordy Glenn. They drafted Jonas Jennings. But there really just aren't a ton of connections. Hey, he'll have a chance if he's never been to Niagara Falls. He's got a chance to go to Niagara Falls. And one of the nicest golf courses in the country is only about 30 or 45 minutes away at Oak Hill in Rochester, New York. So he can probably find a person or two that can get him on at Oak Hill. And there's good hunting and fishing for him up there. But it does get mighty cold during the winter, just a little bit warmer than it does down in Houston County. But, yeah, I mean, it was interesting seeing what was going on Saturday. Hated it for him. Had hoped he had gotten picked higher. But, hey, Tom Brady leaves that division. Maybe the next Tom Brady just got drafted into that division. Unless it was Tua. But Tua would be different since he was taken fifth overall and not in the fifth round or the sixth round. But it is kind of funny how Jake and Tua can't get away from each other.
Well, what I think is interesting too about about like Buffalo, because now it embodies really what I love about just the NFL draft and from college and the pros. And sometimes it's hard to make sense, but they drafted Josh Allen out of Wyoming a couple years ago with in the top 10. I don't remember the exact pick, but I mean, anyone that's like a diehard college football fan is like, that guy wasn't even good at Wyoming. Like, that wasn't even a deal where the guy came from some smaller school and really elevated them to heights they had never reached before. It was just Wyoming was Wyoming, even when they had Josh Allen. And I don't think that they're not any better or worse now than they were when they had him. So that always was viewed as kind of a questionable pick. And then you look at, they take Fromm, who had an excellent college career from darn near winning the national title as a freshman and, you know, making it to the SEC championship game all 3 years of his career. So, you know, now you've got them in the pros. One of them was a top 10 pick. The other was a fifth round pick. And, you know, Allen is definitely the quarterback of their future there. But, you know, I guess from from taking it from purely the college football perspective, you look at it and think, well, Buffalo is winning. They made the playoffs last year, but I don't think you could say they're winning because of Josh Allen. So, you know, when the guy likes to run a lot too, so, you know, there could be an injury or two in his future that, you know, maybe gives Fromm more of an opportunity to get in there and play than he might in some other situation.
So is Fromm ahead of Matt Barkley right now, or how does that work?
I guess that's the key. He's got to beat out Matt Barkley as the backup quarterback. So I think I would imagine he would. I think Barkley is at that point where he's been in the league so long, like he's automatically due. You know, there's like a minimum salary at this point that probably the Bills are thinking, well, we don't need to pay a backup quarterback that.
Yeah.
Have Fromm.
Well, it's great to be the backup quarterback. It ain't great to be the third guy just because of the way things work out on the roster.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Hopefully it'll all work out for Jake and all the other dogs that got drafted and didn't get drafted. Certainly a ton of names from over the weekend, but you know, DeAndre Swift going to Detroit, and you know, I guess of the couple of the guys that didn't get drafted, you know, see how Rodrigo does if he can make the team in Indy. And certainly curious to see how that will all play out for him.
Of all the guys, the one I was surprised didn't get a look was J.R. Reed, because he had a really strong career here, and his dad played in the NFL, so he's got the bloodline there too. And I guess he ended up signing with the Jaguars, but I was kind of surprised he didn't maybe draw some interest on draft day. And I thought Rodrigo would get picked too. That's another thing. It's just weird about the draft, because Buffalo, after they took Jake, took Georgia Southern's kicker, right?
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's like, all right, Georgia Southern's kicker gets drafted, but Georgia's doesn't, and Georgia's won the Lou Groza Award. But I guess Indianapolis is a good spot for him. It's indoors, and their kicker was Adam Vinatieri, who's got to be ready to retire at this point. So you got to figure Rodrigo's got a good chance of winning that job.
Yeah, I would think so too. I don't get the kickers and all that stuff and how that works out when teams decide they want to draft one and when teams decide that they don't. And by the way, I know we talked about this, that me and my buddies did a Mr. Irrelevant contest.
I thought about that, yes.
And how weird is it? We've never done this before. And how crazy is it that a Mr. Irrelevant is a Georgia guy in Tay Crowder? We were all like, this is just totally bizarre. Of course, none of us, and there were 13 of us, none of us had Tay Crowder. We had everybody else that could potentially have been Mr. Irrelevant, but none of us had Tay Crowder. But that was just kind of strange that he ends up getting it. Good for him. You know, that was, you know, I know it's like, would you be better off to be a free agent and not drafted than be the last pick? Yeah, probably. I mean, you have more options as to what team you want to sign with instead of being, you know, instead of being tethered to one specific team. But 30, 40, 50 years from now, take and say he was drafted. So there is something to be said for that.
Yeah. And, you know, not to get all like sensitive about the calling a guy Mr. Irrelevant or anything.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have a problem with it. Obviously, it's just it's all in good fun. But really, for Tay, if there was ever a time when Mr. Irrelevant really didn't stick for a guy, it'd be a kid who was a two-star recruit, who was a running back coming out of high school, who was like on his way, I think, to Georgia Southern to play, and he ends up a really good linebacker who does get drafted, even if it was the last pick of the draft. So it's, you know, like maybe when Chad Kelly gets drafted last, like, all right, he's Mr. Irrelevant. But, you know, but Tay Crowder, it's like if there was ever a time when that calling a guy Mr. Irrelevant seemed a little harsh, it was probably with him this year, just based on, you know, where he came and to have the type of career where he did. He rose up to become an NFL draft pick.
And again, he'll be the answer to a trivia question for a long time, other than being Mr. Irrelevant, of the key play he made in the Rose Bowl at the end of the first half to snag that that kickoff by Oklahoma, that squib kick that enabled the Dogs to kick that field goal at the end of the first half. So yeah, he's always going to be, at least by me, remembered for that.
Didn't those guys used to get invited onto to Letterman?
Yeah, in fact, I looked this up. There's something out in California where they used to have a parade for them, and they'd bring them and their family out there, and they'd honor them and have a little shindig for them. And I think they might still do something like that, but obviously right now they can't. But yeah, they used to play that up and have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, maybe it was if it was in California, maybe it was the Tonight Show or something.
Yeah,
but
I
always thought like there was some, what, like Mr. Irrelevant would end up hitting the late night talk show circuit.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know Tay, but hopefully he's got a good sense of humor about that too, and maybe he can have some fun with it.
Yeah. All right, we'll take a little break here. The Crossover Podcast presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville and in Five Points. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can listen on demand to 960theref.com, or better yet, download the 960 The Ref app. Listen to 960 The Ref wherever you are, whenever you want. You can also catch all of our on-demand programming, like this here Crossover Podcast, at the 960 The Ref app. Find it in the App Store on the iPhone, Google Play, if you are on the Android. So we'll come back and, I guess, talk a little bit about what Atlanta did with the rest of its draft. Speaking of teams that took kickers, they took a punter with the final pick of their draft.
Baron Sterling Von Richtenhofer, or something like that.
Punter out of, I guess, Syracuse, right?
Yeah.
We'll talk about the rest of the Falcons. I know we hit on A.J. Terrell with our episode last week. The Crossover Podcast presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen here on 960theref.com and the 960 The Ref app.
You know it's just a matter of time before you'll want some comfort food, like a big ooey-gooey pizza or juicy wings. But you can curb those cravings with Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen's curbside service. Just go to fullyloaded.pizza and pay by credit card. Then once you arrive, call them with your name and car description. They'll bring all your comforting favorites out to you. Get comfort food curbside with Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen at Five Points in Athens and off Mars Hill Road in Watkinsville.
Crossover Podcast, Part 2, presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville and Five Points. Chris Brame and David Johnston with you, and appreciate you listening to us, however you might be doing that. If you subscribe on iTunes, or you get us on the 960 The Ref app, or just log on your laptop to 960theref.com and catch us on demand. That way, we appreciate it. We're recording this on the final day of April, and hopefully we'll have more sports cranking up here before too long. I guess within the next couple of weeks, those were all some of the target dates when, like, the NBA and Major League Baseball would at least start to provide some kind of updates and maybe have a clearer view of when they might be able to resume their season in the NBA's case, or even just crank up altogether in baseball's case. So hopefully we'll get some good news out of those leagues in the next week or so, which we need.
I'm at the point where, like, hey, we've got NASCAR beginning back on the 17th, and they're doing like a Sunday Wednesday, and a Sunday Wednesday. There's like two or three weeks where they're having like two races a week, and I'm on it, and me and my buddies, I'm sure, will have some other ways to make it interesting too. So I'm all about any kind of news that has anything that has to do with something going on.
Well, the virtual racing wasn't going so well for them. They had that one week when one of the guys just like quit because he was upset. He got up in the middle of the game and left. And then the other one, Kyle Larson, with the N-bomb. So he ended up getting fired. So they probably need to get just back into real racing, because the virtual for a couple weeks is bad news.
No, you're right. And I guess was it last week? They were okay. I don't think anything happened. So they made it through one virtual race without anything crazy going on. But yeah, now they've got to like get back in the cars and get out there. And, I guess like race, that kind of racing is, or, you know, that kind of sport, that's one where, like, I mean, I know they have big crowds and 100,000 people, but it's not like the drivers, it's not like the fans are going to completely affect the race. And it's not like you're playing, you know, it's not like you're in golf and you've got 1,000 people standing around a hole, or it's a basketball game where you're shooting free throws at the end of the game and there's people screaming at you and trying to get you to miss. I mean, the crowd still has affects you, but it's not the same as it would be for other sports. So at least NASCAR, I think, can move on and not to have to worry as much about that aspect of it, just the fact that it's out there. Does that make any sense? Well, I'm rambling because we got cut off, and now I know, think I hung we're back
up,
together.
I hung up on you accidentally, but I think for the competitors, the drivers, like when they're in their car racing around, they're not aware of the crowd that's there. I mean, I get like when, you know, I've heard some of these NBA players that have said that they wouldn't like playing in front of an empty arena, and I get that, because that's part of the aesthetic and the atmosphere. And if you're just playing a game in front of a bunch of empty seats, it's just going to feel like you're at practice or a scrimmage. But with NASCAR, I mean, you know, those guys can't tell if there's an arena full of people when they're in their cars like that, driving at, like, you know, 200 miles an hour.
My dad and I went to the Coca-Cola 600, this was probably 15 years ago, and we sat in the stands. That's the only time I've been to a NASCAR race. It was fun. I had a good time. But there was this group of guys sitting in front of us, and every time Jeff Gordon went by, they stood up and shot birds at his car.
Yeah.
And, and I'm thinking to myself, it's like, okay, I mean, it was funny, but it was like, I don't think that was affecting Jeff Gordon during the race or anything like that. I'm pretty sure he couldn't see that or knew that that's what they were doing. So, you know, again, it's good. The crowds for NASCAR are great. They have a great time, but it isn't going to affect, you know, any of those guys as they you know, make the turn, or turn four, here we go. Oh, these guys are shooting birds at Jimmy Johnson. What's he gonna do? So it was just funny that, and it is kind of weird that that's one of my lasting memories of the Coca-Cola 600, but that's what I remember.
Yeah, I've never heard a driver when they get out, you know, what happened there? You got tangled up in turn number two. I saw some guy in the stand and he shot me a bird.
And it threw me off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I ended up in the wall.
I guess it's possible, but not probable. Yeah.
Yeah, that's highly unlikely. I did like, though, last week that the commissioner was able to work in a few boos to the draft. So that was a nice touch. And
and word now has gotten out that he's giving up his, I don't know if it's month, you know, I don't know, you know, supposedly he's making about $40 million a year. I couldn't figure out, is he giving up his yearly salary, or is he giving up, like, is he prorating it by month? I'm not sure. It's still millions of dollars. But, yeah, I mean, for a guy that's as filthy rich as he is and, you know, pretty powerful, you know, I still thought he came across as a lot more likable than he has been before. Maybe he'll go back to being Darth Vader again. But at least for a few days, he seemed like just kind of a regular Joe, even though he's pretty much not.
Well, I mean, I'll welcome when things get back to normal and we could go back to not liking Roger Goodell. And then it's like, well, hey, right. Now things are normal. I guess I would like to know, though, because the Roger Goodell's salary comes from the owners of the NFL. So I would like to know, by him not taking a salary, well, are the owners then just going to pocket the money and the savings by not paying Goodell? Or is the money that would have gone to him, like, being put to good use, like maybe paying stadium personnel that are currently out of work and things of that nature? Because otherwise it's like, that's fine, Goodell can say, you don't have to pay me my $40 million this year. But if the owners are just thinking, okay, cool, we've all got 40 yeah. more, we got $40 million we don't have to give you now, then that seems kind of pointless. So
yeah, that's a good question. So basically every owner pays him over $1 million a year.
Yeah,
to be the commissioner,
because that's where his salary comes from, the owner. So by him not taking a salary, it's just, okay, well, now these billionaires, just is it just extra money for them? Or, you know, like I said, are they gonna, you know, help you know, cover some of the costs from the rest of the league that, you know, maybe are struggling right now?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a good question. By the way, All right, Marlon Davidson, Matt Hennessy, Michael Wilson, Jalen Hawkins, Sterling Von Rochtenhiffer. Those are our whatever his name is. Those are the names we didn't get to talk about last week because they weren't Falcons, but they are now. I like Marlon Davidson. The Matt Hennessy pick, I mean, I'm going to kind of go out on a limb here and go, that might have been their best pick just for the value of it and where they got him and all that. And he is a lineman, and he might be their center of the future after Alex Mack. The rest of it, though, I'm not quite, you know, not quite sure. Yeah, it wasn't a great draft.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think when the dust settles on it and you see what Dallas did with the draft, it's almost like that's what the Falcons should have done with the draft, was instead of going needs-based and taking a reach at 16, take the best player available, which Dallas did in CeeDee Lamb, and the Falcons could have done with CeeDee Lamb. And then when Atlanta picked again at 47, they could have gotten their pick of Dallas ended up with Trevon Diggs. They could have had Christian Fulton. They could have had Jalen Johnson from Utah. You could have taken that cornerback then that you need, but also then getting at 16 the best player available in the draft. And yeah, you would have thrown him to an already loaded offense, but so what? Load the offense up even more. Now you got Julio, CeeDee Lamb, and Calvin Ridley, and just become a juggernaut on offense.
Yeah, and you may just have to outscore teams in your division now that the Buccaneers have added Brady and Gronk, and you know, with what the Saints have with Breeze. I'm not quite sure. It's kind of funny. The Panthers got Joe Brady, but they didn't get him any offensive players. They took all defensive guys. So I don't know how he felt about that, but that was kind of a strange draft for the Panthers. Not saying that they didn't need what they did, but it is funny how Matt Rhule gets Joe Brady from LSU and then they get no offensive guys in the draft. That's just a weird thing there, but the NFC South is definitely going to be an interesting division.
Yeah, maybe the Panthers are preparing to tank for Trevor.
Maybe so, yeah. I think they're in a good position to do that.
Yeah. I mean, they've got Bridgewater, who they signed, who's been, when he's been healthy and has started games. I mean, but the Saints went, what'd they go, 5-0 with him last year?
Yeah, that's true. They did win games when he was their quarterback.
And, you know, so they've got him, they've got McCaffrey there still. But, yeah, to see a team just go strictly one side of the ball for the draft was definitely odd. But I guess the problem with the Falcons, though, is that they haven't earned the benefit of the doubt. They keep making these later round picks. I mean, you see it was the 14th straight year that the SEC has had the most players drafted. The last time the SEC did not have the most players drafted was 2006, and Atlanta now has taken they've taken 28 players from non-Power 5 conferences and have only drafted now, I guess, when you mix in Marlon Davidson, 21 SEC players. And it's just the frustration there is knowing that you're a franchise. It's in the heart of SEC country. So you're just surrounded by all this talent that the rest of the league seems to love. And they just so often ignore it. And then you throw on top of that, like, oh, yeah, plus the SEC's championship game is held in the stadium you play in every year, too. But yet you mostly ignore the conference.
And there's a pretty good college team that plays near you as well, and you have now gone the entire history of your franchise back to 66 without ever taking a player from that school in the first or second round, which is just, again, bizarre as well.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know about Tech's second round history, but I think Brooking is the only Tech guy that they've taken in the first round in their history. So, you know, I know Tech's not what it used to be, obviously, back in the days of Bobby Dodd and even in the 70s. And for, you know, they did win the national championship, some people say, back in 1990.
Yep.
But, you know, so there have been pockets of success there, too. So, it's not like when you say a Georgia thing or a Tech thing, but maybe it's just like, maybe there is just kind of this underlying little something that they just don't want to feel like they're having to be, you know, I guess
they're being told what to do.
Yeah, exactly. And that kind of thing. And I don't know. I'm not saying there is. It's just kind of interesting. I when I get a minute, I might have to go back and look and see, did the St. Louis Rams ever take anyone from Missouri in the first or second rounds? Or have the Dallas Cowboys, have they ever taken anybody from Texas in the first or second round. You know, that kind of thing. That's just I would like to think that that isn't the case for all these other franchises. Why are the Falcons like that here, just in, like you said, not just Georgia, but just kind of an SEC thing in general?
Yeah,
is this Thomas Dimitroff walk into the room? Is he the smartest guy in the room, and he's gonna show everybody that that's the case? Because that's what it feels like to me.
It feels that way too when you're like, I'm taking here's another guy from Fresno State. You've taken a couple guys from San Jose State, and it'd be one thing if, like, all right, well, these guys are all panning out, but
yeah,
they're not. I mean, if you go and look at the, you know, and maybe not count the, obviously, the guys from this draft or even last year's draft, because it is still early, but, you know, so you've got about 26 names going back to 08 since Dimitroff took over, and I think I circled three the other day that I would even consider were, like, okay players. I mean, one of them was Croy Bierman, who was back in the 08 draft out of Montana. I think, you know, Justin Hardy, it's like, all right, he was okay. And then there might have been, I mean, maybe I DeMonte Casey, who came out of San Diego State a couple of years ago, and that's really about it.
Would you count, I know it's Cal, but would you count Thomas Dekoe? Are you talking about from non-power?
I'm talking about, like, the non-power five guys.
Oh, okay, I got you.
Yeah.
I got you. So, yeah, I mean, that's true, yeah. They've taken a lot and haven't gotten much in return. And then, of course, there was the infamous 2012 or 2013 draft?
Yeah, 12.
The 2012 draft, which was just, I mean, it was basically like they were on probation for a year with that draft.
Every one of those players was out of the NFL by 2014.
I know, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like self-probation.
Yeah.
So let's hope this draft isn't like that as well.
Yeah, but, you know, hopefully A.J. Terrell will turn out to be great, but probably a reach, and they could have done it the way Dallas did it, and that might have been more ideal. But, you know, Davidson, I do like him, but then you read, and it sounds like he was a defensive end in college, and they want to maybe move him inside, bulk him up a little bit, and play him next to Grady Jarrett. So, okay, so they take him in the second round, and now they want to move him to a different position.
Yeah, I like that pick too. I like Hennessy, but yeah, the rest of it I'm just not crazy about. Although the Falcons might come back and say, "Hey, we took a Clemson guy in the first round and a Auburn guy in the second round. Quit your bitching."
Yeah,
you know,
and took a Fresno guy and a guy and a punter.
I know, you took a punter. I know. I know, in a draft where you could use I know it's the seventh round, I get it, but still, maybe there was a guy out there, maybe a Tay Crowder.
Like J.R. Reed.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're throwing a dart, just throw one at, you know, someone in the SEC. I don't even care if it's Georgia, but it's weird to have not done more with the league when the rest of the NFL is. I mean, this past draft, it was like one out of every four picks was an SEC player. And I get the Falcons did take one this year. They didn't take one in 2019, though. But it's just like you're the franchise. Like, you and I guess the Saints and the Carolina Panthers you're just right here in the heart of SEC country, and you keep going out to Fresno State and San Jose State for late round draft picks, and guess what? Those guys don't end up any good.
Yeah, it's head scratching. Yeah, you're right. Like you said, they think everybody's gonna be a Croy Bierman, and it just doesn't work out that way.
I wonder if, like, San Jose State, if, like, their football practices, if they, like, here comes that Thomas, here's Thomas again, and, like, he's the only one that comes around, though, so they probably like him.
Maybe so. I don't know.
Dave, we'll continue best to you, and hopefully one day soon we'll get back in the same studio to record this.
I can't wait. I can't wait.
But we appreciate you listening, as always. Again, you can subscribe on iTunes, listen on demand at 960theref.com, or get the 960 The Ref app. Find it in the App Store if you're on the iPhone, Google Play, on the Android. Thanks also to Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville and Five Points for their support. For Dave, I'm Chris. This has been another edition of the Crossover Podcast presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen here on 960theref.com and the 960 The Ref app.
You've been listening to The Crossover, presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen on 960theref.com.